Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to another episode with the Four Elements. This is your boy Earth.
This is Wind.
And this is Water.
Okay, so tonight we are going to have a very exciting show. We have a special guest who is Chief Amachi Apetor Bureru. And let me just give you a brief description of who Chief Amachi is. So for over 15 years, Chief Amachi has wholly dedicated his life to preserving and promoting West African and Aboriginal teachings in the West. He founded the Indigenous Knowledge Studies, which is known as IKS, program, which has now become the International Indigenous Knowledge and Development Society, which is IIKDS. As the leader and founder of IIKDS, Chief Amachi executes his mission by creating credible apprentices of indigenous knowledge and the goal to establish modern-day wisdom keepers as self-sufficient practitioners of indigenous healing knowledge. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Chief Amachi Apetor Bureru. Welcome, Chief.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, guys. Thank you for having me on.
Okay. So tonight we're going to have a conversation about, well, the show topic for tonight is going to be about resurrecting the gods of nature. So before we go too deep, I would first like to start off talking about what are the initial steps for for someone who's even thinking about getting into some type of traditional or Aboriginal tradition. What are the initial steps that someone would take to get into that?
That's an excellent question. The truth is that people enter indigenous spiritual knowledge through many different doors. So there, I couldn't really say that there is one avenue or one entrance point for traditional African spirituality. I think, what it boils down to is that a person reaches a point within their esoteric studies where they're studying, they're going through what I call the reclamation phase, where they're starting to understand or starting to reclaim a lot of their cultural or historical identity. And then, a lot of us go through the stage of, wanting to figure out who's first, what was this, what was this, what was that, learning various aspects of different cultures. And then for most people, the way that it works out is that they usually reach a point where they start getting exhausted with the conversation of who was first, what is this, what is that, and they want to actually start to dive in to the knowledge or the origin of a lot of the knowledge. Because in understanding a lot of these esoteric sciences, a lot of people will run into the same information, and they'll see that the origin of a lot of these esoteric practices all had their roots in Africa. So they'll see that they all had their roots in Egypt. They'll see that they all had their roots in some type of Mediterranean culture. So then the question, reaches in the minds, well, okay, let me find out a little bit more about, Africa or African culture outside of this speculative knowledge that's given in a lot of these esoteric studies on the basic information on Egypt and so forth. And then that's usually the entrance point, and that was actually the entrance point for me. So, I really can say, people come as they are, so to speak. They come with various different levels and different backgrounds, just really having a thirst for their own identity, I would say.
Wow, that sounds just like you, Earth. To a T.
Somewhat, yeah. So, Chief Amachi.
Yes.
I've had conversations with people, and some people will say that we need to be initiated, or some type of initiation needs to take place before someone gets into these practices. And I've heard people say there's no initiation that needs to take place. You can just kind of jump in and just go for it. So what is your take on that as it relates to initiation? And then what if initiation is necessary, what's the importance of initiation?
Okay. This is an interesting topic that I see a lot now in these different esoteric communities where you have teachers that are advocating the philosophy that, you know, you could just jump right in or you could just pick up a book and you could somehow enter the practice through some type of mentalism. And they're giving you a half-truth. It's maybe 20% true, but it's 80% false. And the first thing that I would do is I would advise all students to really take an in-depth study of ancient culture and history, especially in these esoteric matters, because, you know, we have a lot of people that are involved in occult or esoteric knowledge. So people refer to this knowledge. When you look at these ancient cultures and so forth and civilizations that brought a lot of this vast knowledge, you'll see that they had schools, they had institutions that were in place that taught the information. So, for the life of me, I don't really see where a lot of these people are coming from when they try to preach the philosophy of not having any type of formal, education when it comes to our traditional science. On one hand, you'll hear from teachers that, the knowledge and the scope and the depth of our ancestral teachings is bar none. It's unrivaled. Then in the same sentence, they'll try to tell you that you could just simply get into this knowledge just by picking up a book. When you really listen to that, it doesn't make sense. If the knowledge was that vast, how is it that you're just going to jump into it just by picking up a book or listening to some hour-long video cassette or tape or CD that's going to teach you some esoteric principles? What a lot of our brothers and sisters really need to look at and to realize is that we need to have an appreciation for the empirical nature of our traditional practice, meaning that over millions of years of observation have gone into the structuring of our indigenous practices. So to bring it home to people that may look at ancient Egypt here, if you look at the Dendera calendar, how many millions of years of observation did it take for individuals to literally map the whole precisional tilt, the whole zodiac, literally like a 64,000 year period? How many years of observation did it take in order to actually record and document that information? So you're talking about millions and millions of years of in-depth observation. So when you look at our traditional science, it's the same. So I really ask brothers and sisters to really take a step back and look and realize that if we've always talked about the depth of our ancient knowledge, then we have to know that we're dealing with a science. And in dealing with a science, we have to realize that no one would think that it's logical if you or I were to go into a scientific laboratory and just say, oh, well, we're just going to go in here and we're just going to throw some chemicals together. Hey, let me get that green color gas over there and mix it with this over here and then let's just put it together. I mean, no one would try to do that because they realize that chemistry is a science. They realize that it takes education in order to formalize, in order to structure these complex chemicals and components and units and so forth. So our traditional science is the same. So when you observe ancient history, you see that they have schools, they have societies, they have certain clans that literally have dedicated their life to the observation, to the documentation, whether it's direct observation or whether it's indirect observation, whether it's different types of modeling, experimentation. This is an empirical type of structure that was set here over millions of years. So initiation is the foundation of the way that we introduce and we educate the community. So initiation is an education. It's an education just as prominent as if an individual wants to become a doctor, they want to become an attorney, they want to become an engineer. There's schooling, and there's a structured educational path that's taken so that things can be done in the right way. So initiation is extremely important. And, those who are teaching those type of philosophies, it is my opinion that a lot of these teachers are so comfortable in their position of authority, they're not ready to take a step down and become a student again. So then they preach the philosophy that, I don't need to have an education here. I can just step in and I could, look at a book, and then all of a sudden I become a master when we deal with traditional knowledge. And, before I go on too long, the basis of traditional knowledge out of the northern regions of Ghana, out of the traditions of Dagbong, we call it Tim Mbukata. Tim or Tima, it means traditional medicine, roots, herbs, magic. Bukata, it means the world, soul, and the spirit powers of the earth. The pathway to the Bupata, which is the world, soul, and the spirit powers of the earth, is Tima or Tim, which means traditional medicine, roots, herbs. So the truth of the matter is that when you deal with tradition and traditional knowledge, it's not a speculative art. It's an operative art, and it's an operative art understanding the very base and the foundation, which is the medicine. So without connecting to the earth, without connecting to the roots, the herbs, without connecting to certain aspects of nature, there is no real entrance or path to this traditional practice. A person can sit down and use mentalism, they can meditate, they could look in as many books as they want, but if they're not actually dealing with the medicine, if they're not dealing with the roots, you understand? If they're not dealing with the trees, if they're not dealing with the various aspects of life forms that exist on this planet, then they're not really dealing with the tradition. So in order to understand that and to know that, there is a vast knowledge that exists. And one has to tap into that and get educated, on that. And the laboratory then becomes the earth. And it's a vast laboratory. And just like any other scientific laboratory, you just don't go mixing chemicals together, otherwise you'll blow yourself up. And the same principle applies. This is why there's education that's necessary when dealing with the components of a traditional or an indigenous perspective.
Wow, okay. So since we're going down the road of education, right, and you have to be educated in the same way if you were going to school, to be a doctor or a lawyer or whatever your desire is. So my question is, based upon the title of the show, which is Resurrecting the Gods of Nature, so in becoming educated and actually getting, the information or these millions of years of information from, the keepers of the knowledge, how would someone go about connecting to nature? Because you mentioned, the observation of nature and being connected. So how would someone go about connecting to nature?
Well, see, now this is the other side of the conversation where you have other teachers that are teaching certain philosophies. The first part is what they are explaining to you. The first step is understanding the self. It's dealing with the concept of identity. You see, one of the things that we teach at the University of Traditional Sciences is the principle of nature identity. So identity is the first key. So what most of these spiritualists have been teaching is really boils down to the concept of identity, about knowing thyself, right? So then when we understand basic concepts of mentalism, they always tell you, oh, well, the God is within, or the ancestors are within, or by whatever name they call on, right? But in our traditional practice, so that's the first step. The first step is identity. And then the first step is understanding that, yes, it is true that God, by whatever name you call on, by whatever name you choose to use, exists inside of you, okay? And that is true. But see, this is where these esoteric
teachers are falling off the track, where they're not, where they're missing the piece. See, they're missing the indigenous aspect of it. So where do you go once you understand that there's a part of a higher power that exists within you? Where does that lead you? Well, according to our traditional knowledge, we teach what we call the Noliwuni or the star. The Noliwuni or the star is the components of who and what you are that both exist inside of you, but then they also exist inside of nature, or they also exist as components of nature. So in the traditional perspectives, we see the concepts of psychic abilities, personality traits, qualities, and so forth, and characteristics that exist within flesh and blood beings. We know that those characteristics and qualities don't originate in flesh and blood human beings. They actually originate in aspects of nature. So the best way to look at it is if you look at a wheel and you spin a wheel with spokes very quickly. And if you spin that wheel, then the spokes on that wheel begin to look stationary, or they begin to almost look still. Well, nature is the exact same way. So there are components that exist in nature that appear to be stationary, but the truth is that they're moving so fast they're able to occupy more than one space at a time, including different spaces within your being. So then what happens is that we start understanding the components of who we are from both an individual perspective to then a transpersonal perspective, which means it's a perspective that extends beyond your physical beings into the aspects of nature. But not as in some metaphysical teaching where they teach you that it just grows into some type of, you know, oblivion mass, a blob of something that's not identified. In the traditional practices, then we can identify exactly where aspects of that star are, a parts of you that exist in various aspects of nature. Then you're dealing with a different type of identity. You're dealing with the personal identity, but then you're dealing with the nature identity, which takes you from beyond the concept of just dealing with it within yourself, but then starting to identify aspects of yourself that exist within nature. And see, this is where you've gotten the basic components of what most people call totems and so forth, where people talk about, I am, you know, in certain Aboriginal cultures where they will identify with certain aspects or certain life forms that exist within nature, and they'll say that they are those things and they have a connection. This is what they're talking about. This is what we've always been talking about. I'm in indigenous communities. However, it extends even further than that. And understanding that there is different aspects of who and what you are that extend way beyond your personal identity, but they're more transpersonal and they extend past your personality into the various aspects of nature. So, So before I go off on a tangent, you might want to catch me because. I can.
No, you're doing great. Just really quick, I just want to let the listeners know that if you have a question or comment, press 1, and we'll get you as soon as you press 1. We'll see when you pop up in the queue, and we'll take your call or question. And really quick, wind and water, do you all have any comments or any questions for Chief Amati?
Not at all. Keep going.
I agree. I mean, this is like pretty awesome, pretty amazing. So yeah, keep going, like Wynn said.
Okay, so when we talk about this, like the nature, you mentioned nature identity, and you mentioned like the forces of nature. So, and you talked about how it relates to the star that we have within. So these forces of nature, what relationship do we have with them? Like, are they our ancestors, or are they or like the gods of our ancestors? Like, what is our relationship to these forces of nature?
That's a good question. That's a good question. Okay. So if you deal with the concept of the star, as I said, it's the representation of who you are as components of yourself that exist both inside of you. They're transpersonal, meaning they extend beyond what you could identify as your own personality. They are aspects of your ancestry. Prime example, in the tradition of Timbuktu, it's described as the star is what we call the Noliwuni, is the very seat of the family's power. So, example, and this is the family's connection to nature itself. And what we explain is that there are people that are, there are family members that are the holders of what we call the noliwuni, or the family star. And these are usually people that are always characterized by having these psychic abilities or some type of real strong spiritual power. So every one of you know that there's someone in your family that has that type of power. And, but in Western culture, they don't explain what that is. They just explain it as psychic power, or they explain it as some type of phenomena that may exist. You know, precognition or whatever title or term, you know, they give to it. However, the indigenous communities have always had an answer to this, and it's within in our traditional practice and knowledge. And what we explain is that this is a certain force that exists within the family, a certain spiritual force, or the noliwuni, or the star, that is the family's actual connection that exists between them physically and then nature. However, it manifests itself as these personality traits or these abilities that are seen as supernatural. This is our natural connection to the gods themselves. And this is how we are the gods, literally. And that's an interesting thing, because we always talk about, you know, resurrecting the gods. Understanding that this connection that we have, see, the gods, the spirits, by whatever name you call on, they don't have physical means. They don't have a physical body, but they do have what we, they have mind. So them not having a physical body, they manifest as different types of mental forms that exist in nature. But those mental forms then can manifest through you as behavior or personality traits or characteristics and so forth. This is what I'm explaining to you about certain powers and abilities. This is why you always connect the gods and certain spiritual forces with certain supernatural abilities. And this is why I'm telling you those supernatural abilities that naturally exist within your family line is what we call the noliwuni, or the star. It goes even further to say that most of you, when you're praying, who don't necessarily have these abilities, there could be family members that are praying and that need help. They think that when they pray that they're calling on some god that exists within their monotheistic belief structure. However, according to our traditional knowledge, it teaches that, in fact, it's really the holder of the family that holds that power, that star or noliwuni, it could leave that person, it could come to assist family members, help them, and then come back and rest and sit with that person and with those people that exist within the family that are holding those particular powers or those abilities. See, there's a whole psychological dynamic that exists, you know, within our culture that has never been explained, has never even really been talked about. And this is the very aspect of traditional knowledge. So the phenomena of psychic abilities and so forth like that, that is a connection. That is a connection to nature, because in traditional knowledge, we know that those abilities, they rest in various aspects of nature. So we're dealing with wind, we're dealing with earth, we're dealing with this, we're dealing with that, but there are different places within those components of nature where we, as what we call tindanana, or tindana, which means a landlord of the spirits and herbalists, where we can collect personalities and literally engineer abilities and behaviors that are seen as supernatural. This is where, you know, the lore of our traditional practice of magic and so forth come from, through our knowledge of what? Medicine. And through our knowledge of what? The earth and the different components of the earth. And this is why I'm explaining that it can never be tapped into by just reading a book and listening to a cassette tape. It has to be something that you're literally connecting to the earth. You're literally connecting to what we call medicine or tima. You got to get the roots. You understand? You got to dig back into nature. You got to deal with your own identity, but then even move further back into the identity of yourself that exists in nature. Then we're talking about resurrecting the gods. Because, see, then we'll realize that there are communities, there are ancestral communities and clans. Some of them that I belong to, such as the Tembo clans, the clans of Opeto and so forth, that they were literally groups and clans that literally were dedicated to resurrecting the gods on earth, literally. And they had communities with people that held certain powers. And they still exist, because there's still a lot of you out there that hold these powers. You hold these abilities. And no one's ever been able to explain to you what they are why they are, why you have the ability to know certain things, why you have the ability to see or to think about different things, and you know them, and da-da-da. And they can never explain to you where those things come from. The only thing that they can give you is a title, such as psychic abilities or some type of miscellaneous term or word that will never lead you back to where you're supposed to go, which is back into nature. But they'll always tell you when you go that way, they'll tell you that you're being primitive or you're being, you're being this or you're being that. However, those of us that know that all the esoteric knowledge always leads and has its roots back into our traditional African practices. So we have to know that there's been a lot of information that we're missing. And I have to tell you that, brothers and sisters are going to have to start to re-educate themselves and take the time to become students again. We're going to have to jump off of the conscious bandwagon, so to speak. No, you don't jump off of it. You learn as much as you can, because that's a ticket that will get you in the door. But then when you get to a certain level, you have to realize that you have to be a student again. And a lot of people, like I said, that are preaching this philosophy that you don't have to you be initiated, you don't need any type of structured education. These are the very people that are afraid to become students again. They don't want to become students again because they've been so comfortable in their position of power and authority in the conscious community. So they don't want to humble themselves to become students again and to relearn what they thought they already knew.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned something very interesting about the Noli Wuni and the person who carries the family star. And just for some of the listeners who, like, this is their first time hearing of the Noli Wuni and hearing the definition of what it is, and they may see, like, some psychic abilities within themselves or within one of their family members. And so how would that person actually go about, like, exercising that gift or that ability or being in a place where they can begin to explore it further and become more knowledgeable of it and use it, within their family, within their community?
So they have to find someone, a traditionalist such as myself, or someone that has the knowledge that can identify some of those things. And then even further, when that's done, then there's a process of reestablishing a connection with the very power that rests or sits within them. See, a person only really knows the power that they have in them. It's only a half-truth if they don't understand how it exists, exteriorly as far as interiorly. And this is where the ancient axiom of as above, so below, or so below, as above, exists. So if you only know it from within and you don't know it from without, then you're only understanding half the truth. So the step is that they find a person such as myself, a Tindanana or Bulanana, what we call controller of the gods, or a landlord of the spirits and the herbalists. It's a traditional title, which means a land king or land priest or priest land king. What happens is that there's a process where an individual goes through where there are certain investigations that are done. This is traditionally where there's investigations or certain spiritual readings that can be done where a person can find out, information about their star. They can find out information about the components of them or these abilities and where these abilities really rest. Because a person may say, oh, well, you know what? I have the ability. I've always had the ability to know what is to happen before it happens. I had the ability. I could dream and I see this, I see that. What they don't know is that's really a spirit that they carry. They just don't know it because that spirit, it hides behind them. It hides behind what they call behavior and personality and emotion. See, these spirits, they can hide behind these things. And they only see the exterior behavior. They don't see what's pushing it. And what I'm telling you is these are spirits that a person is holding. So when they come to a traditionalist such as myself, we could find the origin of where those spirits are. So when that's done, And there are certain ceremonial practices that are done. There are certain herbs and medicines and so forth that are collected from the bush. They're going out to the woods and different places where we collect different medicines. We put it together. And then we could put it together on a person to where a person then will sit in the whole power of what they are. Because after all, like I said, certain personality traits, you know, characteristics and so forth that exist within these flesh and blood beings that they're calling these abilities or whatever, they don't exist, they don't originate inside of flesh and blood beings. They originate within the landscapes, within the various biomes, within the various components of nature. So once a person is able to then reconnect, then they come into their real power, because then they are then they're able to know themselves in many places, not just what they call within their own immediate being, but then they can understand where they exist also in nature. And then in that being said, then they can actually collect or add components and characteristics to that to make what they're dealing with even stronger, so that they're able to actually control those things to where they don't become haphazard, but then they become, something that's controlled and something that's useful, and then even further, something that's directed. And this is the practice of Timon Bukata, dealing with the world, soul, the spirit powers of the earth. It's understanding these things, and it becomes a practice in the point of where you then begin to have a healthy relationship between yourself and nature. And not in a way where you're just jumping around and you're hugging a tree, but then you're able to have a healthy relationship, the same way that you would have a healthy relationship with any other family members and so forth that you have in your family or friends or so forth. But then this is what creates the phenomena that most people have understood as magic and spiritual powers in the traditions of voodoo and vodun and black root science and juju or whatever names or titles that they want to call. This is where the phenomena comes. This phenomena comes from that connection, from dealing with yourself, but then dealing with different components of yourself and different aspects and spirits that you carry that exist both in you and exist in nature. And when that communication is there, then there's a lot of things that can be done. There can be a lot of things that are done that are positive, and there are also things that can be done that are negative. Unfortunately, the way that they've pushed in the media and on these poor low-budget movies and these poorly written books, you know, they've pushed this misinformation to demonize our traditional practice and make it seem like it's something that's bad or something that's quote-unquote disagreeable or evil. But that couldn't be further from the truth. Couldn't be further from the truth.
Wow, and you spoke about, like, reconnecting. So just in your experience, what do you see or what have you seen has been, like, the biggest challenge or the biggest barrier in our modern-day culture?
Yeah, the biggest barrier and the biggest barrier in modern-day culture is the thorough job that has been done to brainwash our brothers and sisters and people, period, about their identity. That's the biggest challenge, because a person has to come to a healthy sense of identity. They have to know who they are. And in taking that away, you know, a person has to be rebuilt. And this is the reason why, even though I don't agree with some of the perspectives that are given by some of these teachers that are teaching about non-initiation and so forth, but this is the reason why all of these teachers, all of the elders that we have in our community that have taken the time to educate and to teach about history, about esoteric science and so forth, that's why it's needed. The biggest challenge is education. The biggest challenge is taking, you know, people's minds and washing them and taking their minds out of the minds of other people. Because, you know, the biggest challenge is the fact that our people exist in the minds of other people. We don't have our own minds. We don't even literally have our own thoughts. Most of our thoughts, most of the things we think, most of the things we believe, most of the things we've taught have all been taught by foreign cultural perspectives that are literally on the exterior of our own indigenous traditional perspectives. And that is the biggest key. The biggest key is trying to hand someone a diamond, but they have been told that their diamond is worthless. And the truth is, it's really worth more than anything that they've ever been given. But the challenge here is to educate, to re-educate, and to give people a healthy understanding of the beauty of, their own cultural identity, and to work around the damage that has been done as far as damaging our cultural and racial identity. It's been damaged to such a degree that we can't look at indigenous African perspectives or indigenous Aboriginal perspectives, because the truth of the matter is that in our own mind, we see those things the same way as a lot of the colonial powers do, because our minds think the same way, because we've been educated the same way, we've been fed the same propaganda, we've been given the same educational path. So when we look at ourselves, we hate what we see. We literally run from it. I see people that are involved in, they're involved in ancient Egypt. They're involved in meditation. They're involved in all of this esoteric stuff. And I say, okay, well, what about voodoo? And they, oh, no, brother. Hold on now, brother. I don't deal with that now, brother. You see? They could deal with anything. They'll be a Shamalama pit, Hindu, Swami, but they'll be anything but themselves. That is the biggest obstacle. The biggest obstacle is convincing the lion that he's really a lion and not a fox or not a squirrel. We got a bunch of lions walking around thinking that they're gazelles. And I'm trying to explain to people, you're a lion. You know you hold certain things inside of you. You naturally hold a connection to nature that's unparalleled. It's literally your ability to tap back into it and grab the staff of power that you hold that exists within all of your bloodlines. That's the biggest challenge. The biggest challenge is waking people up to who they really are and their capability, and really teaching them that a lot of the things that they've been taught that are primitive and that are, tribal and that are all these that they've been taught that are so bad are really the very thing that they need to give them the strength and turn them back into superheroes.
Hmm. Speaking of Egypt and people practicing Maat, what I've come across are people who, will practice Maat and they'll stop right there, and they actually believe that the ancient knowledge of the Egyptians is lost. Like there's really no access to that. So, all we really have is like the Book of the Dead, and that's about it. What is your view on that?
And see, that's the irony. And that's a perfect example of how we are getting our perspectives from foreign perspectives that are outside of the interior perspectives of Africa and traditional indigenous teachings, simply because Egypt is very much alive. Everything that you think, people out there, every single thing you think Egypt is, that is the very foundation of traditions that you've called voodoo, that you call judo, that you call African-American folk magic, all these things, the traditions of Timbuktu, any name or title that we've given it, whether it's in diaspora or Kundumble, whether any of these different titles that you're used to, Yoruba, whatever, that is ancient Egypt. That's the biggest trick. See, what people don't realize is that a lot of the traditional knowledge, we don't understand the historical context also of Africa, which is a shame. Just dealing with in modern African history, not in classical, you have three major West African empires. You have the Ghana Empire, you have the Mali Empire, and you have the Songhai Empire. What's so unfortunate is that most people are only familiar with the Mali and the Songhai, and that's only because of their connection to Islam, which is even more a travesty. They're familiar with Musa, Kankan Musa, and all these, and they think that that's so great. But they don't understand that it was great because they are the first to convert to Islam. And they've converted to Islam, and then the whole Western world began to recognize them. But what was before Musa? What was before the Mali Empire, which, by the way, was only for like 200 or so years? What was before the Mali Empire? Where did Musa get all of his gold from? He got it from the Ghana Empire. And the Ghana Empire ruled for over 1,000 years. It was the longest running empire in modern West Africa. It ran from all the way from, like, even modern estimates from 240 AD all the way up to 1240 or so AD, almost 1,000 years. And then the Mali Empire came after that. But they don't hear about the Ghana Empire, which is not in modern-day Ghana now, but it's more up along in the lines where Senegal and Mali was. That's where the Ghana Empire was. They don't hear about them because they were a traditional empire. They still dealt with the traditional gods of their ancestors. They still dealt with that, you see. So you have to understand that old Ghana Empire was literally the Western Sahara extension of their Eastern Sahara brothers, which was in Egypt. So you have to understand that as these migrant Indians, the different Europeans and so forth, the different colonial powers, as they started moving into Africa, you even have to realize that when you deal with the dynastic period, they'd already been fighting amongst the indigenous communities and colonialists for thousands of years. This is why they split up. This is why during the first dynastic, Narmer and so forth had to bring both Lower and Upper Egypt back together, because there was so much fighting happening between the indigenous communities and these foreign colonial influences. So you have to understand, those that were not pushed out by different politics and so forth, they migrated from the Eastern Sahara over to the Western Sahara, and they set up the old Ghana Empire. So you have to understand, this is why we call what we call the Nabihi. The Nabihi in Dagbang, or the Dagombas, we're called the Nabihi. These are the royals from the traditions of Dagbang. It's called Nabihi, but they are the same Nebi, or the Neb, that were in ancient Egypt, which Neb means the masters. These were the masters that migrated in order to preserve the integrity of our ancestral knowledge. This knowledge was taken from the Sahara, from one side all the way over to the other side, and this is where it is. So what I'm telling you is the tradition that most people are afraid of, that is Egypt. And what they're getting as Egypt now is really the colonial perspective, which is so unfortunate. Because they think they're learning about Egypt, and they're not. They're learning about an opinion of what some foreigners think they see according to their own exterior perspectives. Basically, they're educated guesses. And this is what they think they're learning, where they understand Maat and any of these other Inanaz, the Og Dogs, or whatever they think they are understanding. They're really getting a European perspective. And you have to understand, it's an impossibility for foreigners that are part of an exterior mental dynamics to look at the African perspective there and really understand what they're seeing, because they don't have the psychological reference point. They exist on the exterior. They can only observe and give you an example of what they think it is according to their own psychological dynamic. So when these people are dealing with Egypt and stuff like that, they're fooling themselves. They're not dealing with Egypt. You want to deal with Egypt? Start dealing with Timbuktu. Start dealing with voodoo. Start dealing with juju. That is Egypt. And anyone who's done any study in Egypt would know that that is their practice. Egyptian and ancient voodoo, or Timbuktu, or whatever traditional that you know, it's one in the same. If you look at the hieroglyphs, and you look at the dictionaries, and you look at what some of these things are, like the Aku, you start looking at these different words and so forth, the Egyptians were traditionalists. They're the exact same as any West African or any African on the whole continent, or most indigenous people around the world. They're the same. They dealt with nature, and they dealt with Timbuktu, Bukata. That's what we call Timbuktu. Timbuktu, Bu, Ba, So, Ka, Spirit, Ta, Earth. And then even further, when you deal with Mali and you deal with all that, then you deal with Timbuktu, Timbuktu, Timbuktu. It's the same. So this knowledge still exists. And there are caretakers that still deal with it, and I'm one. This is something that we deal with as far as what we call our traditional knowledge. It's been preserved. It does exist. Ancient Egyptian, that knowledge, it does exist. But it exists within the interior dynamics of our cultural practices, and not within the exterior philosophies of foreign perspectives that most of these people are getting in a lot of their literature. If you want to know what Egypt is, you have to dig down into the very root of what Africa is. You will find it there, but you're not going to find it through a foreign colonial perspective or observation of what they think Egypt is. And this is where we're missing, and this is the whole point where I said that the big obstacle that's there is to get our people to take their minds out of foreign colonial mentality and then take them back into our own interior perspectives. Then they'll be able to see Egypt for what it is. Then they will understand when they look at Haru, or they look at Haru and he's a teenager and he's sitting, you know, you see him sitting on the crocodile, standing on the crocodile with snakes and so forth on his hands and then best on his head. Then you understand what you're really looking at. Then you'll understand what's really going on. Then you'll understand that they were that what made Haru a god was not that he's a god himself. It was because of what he dealt with. When you look at those stories, when you look at Haru, what happened? Haru was taught by his mother in the swamp. Who is he taught by? He was taught by who? The Duty, the god of what? Magic. And Khonsu, right? The god of movement. And he was taught in the swamp. Very, very, very interesting. And then what was he taught? Then when you see him when he's raised and he's standing on the crocodiles, he has the snakes and scorpions in his hand, and he has Bess standing on top of his head. Personalities or entities still exist in our traditional. The Bess is what we call the Papadaga. Those are the dwarfs. Those are the dwarf spirits. So we have to understand what made him a god was the spirits that he was holding. This is tradition. This is why you get initiated. Because Haru had to be initiated. He wasn't a god because he was just born into it like that. He was god because he got trained. And then he started to hold certain spirits. He's holding the same spirits by duty. You understand? Which is dealing with certain things of Mami Wata and all sorts of things. So what we have to understand is that we've gotten a different perspective. This man, Haru, had to go through training. His mother trained him. And he was trained in roots. He was trained in magic. He was trained in those things, in the swamp. And when he came out, he was holding certain beings. Like I told you, the Papadaga, or we call the dwarfs, or what most people call Bess, which are the very, very short spirits. We still deal with those spirits in our tradition. Those are called Papadaga. Some people call them Kundumble or Momotia. They're the dwarfs. These are certain spirit forces in nature. You see, Haru had them. This is why he has it hovering above his head. That's a dwarf spirit. This is what gives him his power. This is what makes him the king, based on the spirits that he's holding. So everything that I'm talking about before, about understanding spiritual identity and so forth, this is the reason why initiation is necessary, and this is the reason why identity and nature identity is necessary. Because as you move further into nature identity, you then begin to regain those components, and then you yourself become a god for sure, and you resurrect yourself as a god, not because you have to understand gods are identified by the powers that they hold, essentially, their personality traits. This is our traditional way. Our traditional way of Timbuktu was literally created in order to what we call to resurrect our ancestors back into the gods. Not necessarily by worshiping some gods, but because we literally hold the powers of the gods themselves. We hold those exact powers by our identity. And by doing that, we too become the god. So the real goal would be to resurrect yourself back into the gods, but that has to start by you understanding your identity in nature and understanding where your power is. So if you understand that you have some power now, if you start identifying with your power that really exists in nature, you start holding it, you start really holding that power, then the abilities that you have will blow people's minds, and people will see you as a god. Because you not only will have the ability to see, you have the ability to do. You have the ability to move nature. This is what we do. This is what Marcus Garvey talks about. Says, you destroy me, I'll send back a whirlwind. We have to understand what's really going on here. We have to understand what's really being talked about. And until we understand that, we're still going to be, you know, we're still not going to, you know, sit or rest in our real power.
So, you know, you mentioned other, like, or you mentioned us being God, and you know, one thing that I'm sure you probably heard, and maybe a lot of callers have heard, and maybe a lot even refer to themselves as this, is I hear a lot of people referring to themselves as gods and goddesses, and it's sort of becoming, I don't want to call it a cliche, but just a title that people are holding or attempting to hold and just call themselves that, without necessarily there being any action behind that, or, you know, any type of, I guess, initiation or anything like that. So what is, like, your view on people calling themselves or referencing themselves, you know, as God, or just referencing everybody they know as God or goddess?
So we have to look at gods and how they develop and how they come to who they are. The truth is that gods have to be educated. Even gods are educated. The truth is that a lot of us, you know, we're fooling ourselves. We're really fooling ourselves. Are we that by, are we gods by natural design? Of course, right? In theory. But in practical application, are we gods? No. You can become a god by proper training. And this is what we teach in Timun Bukata. This is why, you know, our ancestors saw themselves as what they call the Nam. They call themselves the Nam, or the Wu No Nam, or the Nam. They saw themselves a representation of God in the flesh on the earth. They call themselves Nam. It means God resurrected, because they knew that they had a connection to what we call the Wu No Nam, or the gods of the ancestors that exist in nature. And they knew that they held certain powers. So the things that they do, you know, you could lie like this, you know, different clans and so forth were untouchable, were able to create a lot of the a lot of the legends and folklore that you read about in a lot of these different, you know, these abstract cultures where they, in the Greeks and so forth, they talk about the relationship between the gods and the men and so forth. I'm telling you, this was what we dealt with. This was us. This is how those, a lot of those legends were created, based on the reality of our cultural identity. And we are the gods, and that exists within our bloodline. And the truth of the matter is that because it exists in a lot of you, then you are the forebearers. You are the those that will be able to pick up the birthright of who you are naturally, because you have certain things that are moving through you that exist in you and that also exist in nature. So it's true, but it's not true if it's not applied. It's not true if it's not put into action. Gods are by action. That's what gods are, action. And you are a god according to your actions and your abilities and the things that you hold. That's why I'm trying to refer you guys to Haru, to a lot of these other things. You see a lot of these gods in ancient Egypt. You want to look at, use ancient Egypt, you always see the gods. They're holding certain things. They're holding certain staffs. They have certain things like the Ba or the Aku or so forth. They're floating above them. And there you see them in their stance and so forth. These are the forces of nature that move with them. And with the forces of nature that move with them, they are able to become what most people call the gods, which really is just a title. That's the truth. You are here. That's just a title. It doesn't really mean much. It's a title. People call you gods because you had the ability to move nature. You had such a relationship with nature that nature itself, wind, earth, and so forth, that earth itself and the forces that move through earth can take you from one place, boom, take you to another place, can move something. When something needs to be done, boom, you can make it happen. And people that were from the exterior would look at you and would observe that and would call you a god. Do we call ourselves gods, really? No. Those are foreign terms. But we were called those things based on our connection to nature. And because we had such a connection to nature, we were able to do supernatural things. And we're able to create supernatural phenomena. So the truth is that until, brothers and sisters, until you get back into that state, you're not a god. No.
The goal is just like Haru or just like any of those other, you have to go through that training. You have to be trained. And once you are trained, then, yes, then you have, you know, you hold the staff, you hold this, you hold that, this is behind you, and then boom, you know, that's for sure, you are. But God is a title. It's, you know, like a guard or something, you know, it's a title or a concept. It's just really foreign, you know. And most of these gods, if you look at the conceptual idea that they put around gods and so forth in these, you know, in a lot of these perspectives, you identify those gods by what they have the ability to do, their action,
mm-hmm.
what they're able to create, what they're able to destroy. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh. Well, we actually have a caller who has a question, so we're going to jump to the phone lines and get this question, if you don't mind. It's taking a minute to do that.
No, absolutely.
Okay. So let's get the first call. Caller with the last four digits, 8203. Caller, last four digits, 8203. State your name, where you're calling from, and what's your question or comment?
Hello, good evening.
Hello.
Good evening.
Good. Okay. This is Amira. I had a question for Chief Amachi. In listening to you speaking of our identity in nature, the gods of our ancestors in nature, or the gods, and also being a god, I wanted to ask you, how would you connect with people who are just starting out in recognizing that there's something other than themselves that's calling to them? And as you talked earlier about psychic abilities and recognizing personality and traits that seem, quote-unquote, supernatural, how would you address somebody who is starting to recognize this in their lives and wanting to be able to connect at a deeper level, at an indigenous level? They may not have looked at the indigenous level before because, you know, the idea just never crossed their minds, but they're feeling a connection with, you know, an otherworldly power or otherworldly source. So how would you guide those people, or what would you say to those people who are just beginning to kind of connect and want to understand what's happening to them as they're manifesting certain abilities and powers and gifts?
That's a good question, Amira. That's the reason why we have, I spent years developing, you know, IKS, the original Indigenous Knowledge Studies, and then even further now to developing IIKDS, which is the International Indigenous Knowledge and Development Society. And we have the University of Traditional Sciences, which is a university platform that's both online, but it's something that's interactive, that is something that is very hands-on. And so we've created a community, a university, where there are structured, there's a structured educational path for people that are beginners, that have interest in learning indigenous spirituality and so forth. We have classes. So we have a class that's coming up here at the very end of the month, which is the Initiation into Nature course. You know, and so we have courses. We have a master's program course, which is a whole year's course, where, you know, brothers and sisters can come in from the very beginning and can go through a year, a structured program, in order to become, you know, a practitioner. But even further, we have developed structured programs that we are put together so that an individual with, you know, starting from the very beginning, can reach a level to where they could operate, to where they can actually service the community spiritually, where they can provide spiritual care. So the goal of our institution is to, number one, train a new era of traditional healers, number two, to provide spiritual care, And then number three is to provide, to create strong communities. So the way that we do that is that we have this educational platform where, you know, if you go to our website, www.iikds.org, you know, you can see there's a lot of different programs and a lot of courses that are available, and there's more courses that are coming. We have several courses. We have a trip that we're taking this September to Africa, to the northern regions of Ghana, where we have structured educational programs that are going on, where we're giving you know, brothers and sisters a chance to actually get involved in dealing with, you know, authentic traditional elders and so forth firsthand. And so this trip that we have coming up in September is the first leg of our master's program. So we have a graduate studies program, and this trip to Africa at the end of September is the first leg of that, the first semester in that master's program. So there's a lot of different opportunities that we're providing through IIKDS, the University of Traditional Sciences, and then the Association of Traditional Healers and Readers, which is a whole other platform where we're training people on how to divine, how to do traditional diagnostic techniques. So anything you could possibly think of, IIKDS, or the International Indigenous Knowledge and Development Society, has literally dedicated, we've dedicated, you know, our time and our efforts in order to structure these programs. So, there's a whole society. It's the International Society of Traditional Scientists, which are a network of traditional Bulana, Tindana, Jinwaraba. These are traditional medicine men and medicine women, fetish priests and priestesses and so forth that are throughout West Africa that are a part of the network of the international the International Association of Traditional Scientists, which are literally there to support the university students. We feel that we are addressing these concerns by creating a legitimate educational path for people that are interested in learning. And we are taking students that are beginners all the way to people that are advanced, and moving you up the ladder in whatever specific area of knowledge that you have interest in, because we have such a large support system when it comes to teaching and the knowledge, whether it's myself or whether it's several different elders and so forth that are associated with the university that are teaching various subjects. So anyone that is interested in actually learning, authentic traditional knowledge, this is the platform. In addition, so that's how we're addressing that. It's not an easy task, but one of the things I've been stressing this whole conversation is education, and then even further, creating an educational platform. So the University of Traditional Sciences and IIKDS, the International Indigenous Knowledge and Development Society, this is what we've done. We said, okay, if this doesn't exist out here and people are searching for this knowledge, let's structure something and put it together with authentic people, authentic teachers, and let's get the real indigenous knowledge to the people so that we can re-empower and essentially the topic of this show today, which is to resurrect, the gods. This is how it's going to be done. It's going to be done through education. You can't run from the education piece. And this traditional education is what a lot of you have been waiting for. And I know there's a lot of people out there that have gone through a lot of different routes. You've been given the runaround for 10, 15 years and literally come out still not knowing much of anything. Our goal is to eliminate that. Our goal is to give our students an authentic education that's unrivaled. I really motivate people to go to www.iikds.org and take a look at the platform. And then we have another platform, it's Association of Traditional Healers and Readers, which will have the extension and so forth on our site to that platform, which is www.village.iikds.org. which is a whole other platform. It's a community for everything traditional. So we're providing a place for people that are interested in things that are traditional, indigenous knowledge from you know, whether it's international or whether it's, you know, local. You know, we're providing a platform for people to come to get involved with practitioners, to get involved with spiritual investigations or spiritual readings. You know, we're looking for people that are interested in you know, developing their network and building clients. So, you know, on that network, you know, there's so many things that are available. So we've created a couple platforms here where, you know, if a person is truly interested in learning indigenous knowledge and they're truly interested in getting the real knowledge from the interior perspective, we've created that platform for people to do just that. Yeah, so that's a good question. I'm glad you asked that question.
Thank you, Chief. And just one final question, if I may, moderators. So, Chief, you spoke of being able to connect with the gods of the ancestor, the gods in nature, connect with your nature identity, and being able to be trained or initiated into these processes. For people who are accustomed to modernity and the idea of, I'm just going to throw it out there, co-creation, manifestation, visualization, and success based on my ability to produce or initiate my own path, how would this particular connection with nature and nature identity and the gods of nature, how would that support somebody who has been accustomed to more or less being driven by a self-propelled navigational path that says, I am my own man or woman, I can manifest what I want, all I have to do is work hard at it for several thousand hours or whatever it is, and I will be able to achieve and deliver what I need to do. How does traditional science play into the modern world where we are so focused on self-identity and not nature identity?
Well, yeah, so that's a good question. And, you know, essentially that's what we've been talking about this whole hour. You know, the goal here would be is, you know, everything that you're saying is correct. A person can do all those things just by having a healthy sense of identity or just having a healthy drive. You know, our goal is to educate people, you know, further and to teach them things that extend past personal identity and then focus even further on, you know, a transpersonal, you know, level. So understanding that, you know, the goal here would be to reach a healthy sense of cultural identity. When you look at when you look at different studies that have been done with the Journal of Black Psychology and so forth, you know, cultural and racial identity have been identified as keys to, you know, proper or healthy cultural function, mental functioning, interpersonal coping skills, self-esteem, and so forth. So our goal here is to help further that progress along by cultivating a healthy sense of cultural identity, and then even further, moving further into an identity that reaches past personal identity, then into nature identity, which is a part of the spiritual practice. So everything that we're teaching is a complement to the success and to the achievements and the skill set that people already bring to the table. So the goal here is not to put down any of the skills that you've learned through whatever training or whatever personal drives or things that you've developed throughout your life. By all means, no. Our goal is to take all those things that you have and then help to develop a healthy sense of cultural identity and then even further a nature identity, which are all things that have been
said even by people that study behavioral, which can even catapult you even further to develop yourself spiritually. Our goal is we're looking for people that already have success in a lot of these areas. IIKDS is a spiritual institution. It's an institution that focuses on spiritual development. That being said, I would also introduce that a lot of the concepts that people are familiar with in esoteric practices, they actually exist within the interior dynamics of, Timur Bukata or our traditional African perspectives. So a lot of people are familiar with the concepts of meditation and those type of things that exist within traditional African perspectives, but they do. So our goal here is we are a spiritual institution, and it's an institution that we are a graduate studies institution. So our goal here is to create graduate studies programs, and that being said, these are graduate studies programs that are based on indigenous perspectives. So that being said, we're looking for people that are already skilled in a lot of these other areas. That's your bachelor's degree, or you may even have your master's and so forth on the way that you produce or the way that you are able to move throughout life. However, our graduate studies program is there to complement what it is that you learned. That being said, first and foremost, our goal is to cultivate a healthy sense of identity. And that's something that could always be worked on. And it doesn't have to be something that is a substitute for what you already know. It's something that's a complement. So, the goal here is to gain a deeper understanding on the perspectives that you already are most familiar with. And those are the people that actually do very well, because those are people that have actually taken the time, for years and years to do study in different esoteric areas and so forth. And then when you bring that to the table, you're able to move further within these indigenous studies, because then you have a point of reference. And that's the important thing. So those who already bring a decorated, portfolio to the table, it's only going to further, your development in indigenous knowledge, because now you have, a reference point. So there is no real comparison. I think right now what's happening is that there is a movement that's happening where people are in the phase of a reclamation. We're moving past of just recognizing or reclaiming, but now we want to understand those things from an interior perspective through real practical knowledge, real operative knowledge, and that's what we provide, at our institution. We are a spiritual-based institution. Mm-hmm.
So in closing, Chief, I would understand you to say that there is more than one identity. There is the personal identity or the individual identity. There is a cultural identity, and there is a nature identity. So a person, to be able to fulfill their path, need to focus more than just beyond their personal identity into cultural and nature identity. Am I understanding you correctly?
Well, so cultural identity would also be a part of a person's own, personal identity. You have cultural identity, a racial identity, yes. But then you also have the nature identity. But then even moving further to nature identity, you have causal identity, and then you have transcausal identity. These are even further steps, even further than nature identity. So the goal here is for a person to essentially understand themselves better. And that's the goal of indigenous knowledge, is to provide a platform where a person can understand themselves, yes, beyond their own personal identity, but then through their identity that exists in nature, and then even further to their causal identity, and then even further to their transcausal identity, because the goal here in religious perspectives has always been to create that connection between yourself and between God by whatever name you call on. So this is how it's done through the traditional practice. It's by taking these steps and understanding your identity from one level to the next, to where you actually have a functional relationship and connection to yourself from you as an individual all the way back to what most people will call God. By understanding these steps and this progression, whether you're dealing with nature identity, whether you're dealing with causal identity, or whether you're dealing with transcausal identity, moving you all the way back into the holism of what most people have always been trying to identify as God themselves. But there's a traditional path this way, and this is the reason why, you know, the priest, so to speak, has his ear to what we call Nawuni, or what most people call the gods, because we have that step that's there, to where we have that ladder, or that progression between us, nature, our identity that exists within nature through the causal forces of nature, and then even further to the transcausal forces that exist in nature. These are where the beings that most people are calling gods, where they sit. And then having this connection through this identity is the very foundation of what religious perspectives have always taught. And this is what traditional perspectives are. And this is what we teach. So it extends way beyond, that. But I'm glad you asked that question, because then that kind of gets out some information as far as why it's important. The real important is being a spiritual institution is what making an authentic connection to the Creator by whatever name you call on, or the Creators by whatever name you call on. And there's an actual path and a method to that through the indigenous practices. And this is what we call nature identity and the concepts of Tim and Bukata. There's a path through nature to the Creators, to the gods, by whatever name you call on themselves. There's an actual path there. So this goes beyond a practice of just basic magic or creating phenomena. This ties back into the very need and the desire for mankind to connect themselves to God, the gods, the creators, the divine, whatever name you call on, but whatever monotheistic practice or what have you. The goal has always been to connect to that higher power on a personal level. We have our ways through traditional knowledge. It's just that our ways through traditional knowledge also, you know, people have been mesmerized by the magical component of it, because the person would really need to ask, well, what's past the magic and all these powers of the gods that you're talking about? And what happens when you become a god? What happens when you have all these powers? What happens when you have the ability to save so many people and to create miracles and to uplift, to build people? Well, what's next? What about the real authentic connection to God? What happened to that? Well, this is what this path leads to. This path leads to that connection, but that connection is back through nature, because it's nature that grows all these physical things into being. So our goal is to trace our way back through nature, back to God itself, or back to the gods, or back to whatever name you call on, you choose to use for whatever it is that you call God, whether it's Nawuni, we could say Nawuni, right? But whatever it is, but that's the goal there. So this is the goal. Of the knowledge, it extends way beyond, you know, it ties back into the very fundamental question of mankind, is who are you and what is your place in this realm or in this place, in this world? And then, what is the real connection? So the goal here would be to give you an authentic connection that extends past the book, that extends past one holy person and extends past one holy place. That's what most people have. They have a holy book, they have a holy place, a person, and they have a place. They have a person, place, and thing, and that's their connection. Our connection in traditional knowledge is nature itself. And it's vast. It's not one person. It's vast. It's vast. And it's not limited to person, places, and things. It literally can travel through person, places, and things into the holism of all itself.
Wow. Amira, thank you for the questions. Yeah, they were very, very good questions. Wow, you said a lot, Chief. I actually want to comment on some of that, but we have another caller in the queue, so we want to take this call real quick. Caller with the last four digits, 4471. caller with the last four digits, 4471. State your name, where you're calling from, what's your question or comment?
Well, greetings, Chief Amachi. This is Menno Hockey. Calling from San Diego.
Greetings.
You kind of touched on. I have two questions. You kind of touched on one. I think you spent most of the time really speaking to this. But what I was thinking about is in regards to what you were saying, and even I think in also in regards to what the Sister Mary was saying. I noticed for myself personally when I talk to certain people who don't have spiritual reference as far as traditional spiritual reference versus a monotheistic reference, when we're talking about the notion or the concept of divinity, mm-hmm. you know, if you, what I'm asking for is basically, is there another way that you can speak to the difference or the understanding of divinity from a traditional perspective?
Yeah, so
versus
and that's
a monotheistic perspective.
Yeah, of course, and that's what I've been speaking on this whole hour as far as the Noli Wundi. Yeah. You see the connection that people have with divinity, as you put it, divinity or the divine or the higher power hides behind your emotions and your actions, your behavior, your personality traits and your qualities and the perspectives that create or form you and that give you your own individual identity. Mm-hmm. So that identity exists both in you, but it also exists in nature. And this is what I was speaking on when I speak about the connection of the Noli Wundi and how there may be components of who and what you are that exist in you, but they also exist by a hillside or by a river. Or they may exist in some deciduous forest somewhere, but then you have to understand that these things also extend and exist within the various landforms that exist within the environment. So within these landforms or within this environment, you see, you have the actual minds and the mental entities, units, souls, and so forth, that are responsible for creating aspects of vegetation, that are responsible for creating the various life forms that then feed off of the vegetation. So you have a step by step component where you have these minds and mentalities that exist in nature that are responsible for creating life forms that are responsible for creating certain ecosystems and certain biomes that exist on this planet. But then even further, it's these very biomes or these landforms, these hills, these rivers, these different rocky terrains, whatever it may be, these different landmasses. These different landmasses exist as entities themselves. But then those entities themselves then also create various types of life form and vegetation. But these life form and vegetation also give birth to various life forms and so forth that exist. And that those same personality traits and qualities that create the dominant and non-dominant personalities that exist within certain environments also influence the personality and the behavior and the traits that exist within you as far as your own human qualities and traits. So then our goal here is then to dive back into nature and to understand those components and to deal with those components, and then we could work our way or travel our way back, all the way from the largest forms, all the way back to the smallest, all the way back to the invisible, all the way to that which is beyond, which creates visible perspectives. So this is traditional knowledge. This is why you have certain totemic symbols and so forth that exist within Native American tribes and clans and so forth. They may identify with the bird, they may identify with the bear, they may identify with this.
This is representing a totemic expression or behavior. Or even further, there are certain spiritual forces that move behind that behavior that are responsible for a particular life form or the particular behavior or the personality or to the traits that exhibit themselves in nature or through different life forms. So the goal then is to deal with those components, because it is even the Noliwuni, or it is even the Nawuni themselves that move through the characteristics of these beings that you're dealing with, whether they're totemic symbols or not. So when you deal with these totemic symbols, you understand that it is the Noliwuni, or it is the Wu No Nam, the gods of our ancestors that exist in nature, that ride those totemic forces. They're the ones that give them even personality traits in life. But they're the ones that are also hiding behind their behavior. And they themselves are nothing more than reflections of the dominant or non-dominant reflections that exist within the environment. Are you following me?
Wow. Yeah, I'm following.
You sure?
Yeah.
Well, thanks for the question, caller. We're down to the last 4 minutes of the show, and we actually have another question. Someone actually texted in a question. Let me ask this question to you real quick. Actually, it's a pretty good question. So the question is, are there spirits that don't serve us, or is it simply that we are disconnected and unable to be intentional on the use of these spirits?
Yeah, so this is the thing. Spirit, we have to understand what spirit is, and no one's going to see. We always use these terms. And this is actually the last question I can take, because then I have to perform some duties this evening. But we have to understand what we're talking about when we say spirits. See, I hear people talking about spirits, but then we have to identify what are spirits. What is spirit? So what we're talking about here is we're talking about Tim and Bukata. Bukata, we're talking about the world soul and the spirit powers of the earth. So when you talk about the world soul and the spirit powers of the earth, we have to understand, well, what is spirit? So you have to understand that spirit is the life or the mind of the earth and so forth itself. It exists very similar to the way that your mind exists, as it creates electrical forces. Do you understand? So when you think, when you focus, you create electrical gas, you create electrical phenomena. The earth is the same. So when it thinks or it focuses, it has a brain. When it focuses and it thinks, it creates electrical movement. It creates movement. And this movement, these individual movements, the same individual movement that you have when you move your finger, your brain has to think. So when your brain thinks, it creates electrical charge. That electrical charge moves all the way through your central nervous system, all the way through your peripheral nervous system, all the way through your limb, and then gives you the ability to move your finger. That spark that moves from the mind all the way to you moving your finger is spirit. So earth has spirit. Earth has many spirit, and it, believe it or not, it's spirit that moves all person, places, and things. There's no one thing that's moved on the planet without spirit, and that's what I'm explaining to you. And I was just talking to, with this brother, and I was talking about these things from a perspective. All things are moved from spirit. All living beings, all non-living is moved by spirit. So there are spirit that's responsible for birth. There's spirits that's responsible for growth. There's spiritual that's responsible for non-growth and decline and death. So there's spirits that serve you. There's spirits that don't serve you. There's all different types. Just like there are different types of human beings, there are different types of spirits. So there's not just one type of a spirit. There's so many different, you know. But what we have to do, before we start getting to this conversation of spirit and this type of thing, we first have to start understanding these concepts from the indigenous perspective first, and then we can start having a conversation with it. Because oftentimes when we start having these conversations about spirit and what's this and what's that, we have to wash our minds of a lot of perspectives and ideas that we've been given that are really polluting. They're polluting the dynamics of what is being presented So it would be hard for the idea to move forward without understanding exactly what spirit is from a perspective. So if a person said what spirit is, they have to, you know, understand it from an indigenous perspective first, and then I can explain more about spirit. What was the last part of that question that your sister was talking about?
The last part of the question is, are we unable to be intentional on the use of spirit?
Yes, we are. But see, this is another thing, and that's a whole other thing. We've gotten this information through esoteric knowledge, and that's the whole thing. And what I'm telling you is spirit is intention. That's the whole deal. See, people think. You ever heard of the term coincidence or coincidence? Like a person will get up from their house, they will go get dressed, they'll drive to the store, and they'll be at the right point at the right time, and they meet their buddy. And all of a sudden they're like, hey, I've met my buddy. But they don't realize that the real director of that is spirit. And you think that it was your intention to get up and to do something. But the whole point is that emotion and those type of things have really been fueling you. But there are spirits and there are certain beings that sit behind emotion that push it on you and give you intention and make you think that you are just an individual in the game. And that's an illusion. Because intention has to do with spirit, whether it's your spirit or whether it's an external spirit. Because you create spirit by your own mind. So, yes, you can use your own mind and you could create an air of your own intention through your own mind and through repetitive things. But most of the time, most people aren't functioning off of their own mind. They're functioning off of the impulses and the emotions that have been fed to them subconsciously. You watch TV, you're programmed. You watch the channel. You watch all these things, and you think that you're moving and moving on your own intention, your own free will. That's the basics of psychology. 90% of people are not. You're moving off of the preconditioned program that's been given to you, and you think you have your own emotional drives or intentions, but you really don't. You have the intention of the person that's programmed you while you watch that program on the channel. So the goal here then is to deal with certain spiritual forces that exist in nature that will help you to move and to have intentions that are external, outside of the conscious or mass consciousness dynamic. Then you become special because then you move differently. You don't move like the rest of the sheep in the herd because you're dealing with outformation or you're dealing with information that's outside of the your circle. Yes.
Wow. Man, we can actually go on and on. This is a really good conversation. We have actually reached the end of the show, and I know, Chief Amata, you have some duties that you need to take care of.
Yes.
So before we go, two things. A, is there anything that you want to leave the listeners with? And second, go ahead and say how – and give the information on how the users, not the users, but the listeners can actually get in contact with you.
Okay, thank you. So they can travel to my website. It's www.iikds.org. And they could get in contact with me through email at ikslessons@yahoo.com. And I really motivate people to come, to the university platform to get involved in some of the programs. We have, a lot of outreach that we're going to start doing over the next few months. We have a lot of new classes and things that I really encourage people to get involved with a structured educational path, which will be, you know, something that's going to be really valuable for, these brothers and sisters. So I thank you for you guys for taking the time hearing me ramble over the last hour or so. But, thank you for having me on.
Oh, you're very welcome. And, thank you for taking the time to be on the show. And I'm sure, for me, the show was very informative, and I'm sure the listeners got a lot out of the show. And also, what I'm going to do is I'm going to post your information on the Four Elements Facebook page. So if you all are not in a position or didn't have an opportunity to write down Chief Amati's contact information, I'm going to go ahead and post it on the Four Elements Facebook page. So thank you, everybody,
for
joining us for another show. Appreciate everybody coming out. And thank you again, Chief Amati, for, you know, giving of your time to actually allow yourself to be, I don't want to call it interview, but just to have a conversation about the resurrection of the gods in nature. So really appreciate that. And just for everybody, just next week we're going to have another show, another exciting show. So join us next Sunday at 7 p.m. It'll be the same time as always. All right, everybody have a fantastic week and have a good night.